You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for January 31st, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from outside the Gambino Family Memorial Congressional Balcony, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
And so it turns out that the reporter who got threatened by that congressman who said he was going to throw him off a balcony.
Michael Grimm,
I'm going to break you in half like a little boy because you're not man enough.
Who apparently is going to hook up with Anthony Weiner for their own show, The Grimm Weiner Hour.
Turns out that that little guy who was a little reporter for New York One.
Yeah.
Turns out he's a nephew of the Gambino family.
Oh, see, that's a good thing right there. Yeah. Look for the flak jacket with the fish in it to show up at your doorstep, Congressman Grimm. I'm not saying anything bad's going to happen. I'm just saying maybe you don't want to take any rides in New Jersey with people you don't know.
Man.
I'm not saying that's a good thing or bad thing, but I'm saying that's a thing.
It's a thing, and I wouldn't be walking by any balconies either.
Yeah. You know? So it was Barzini all along.
I was going to say, apology accepted, Congressman.
I mean, Michael Grimm really is indicative of, he played rather prominently in the John Stewart.
Yeah.
Epic John Stewart rant. Although I prefer the term Jeremiad, because rant.
Yeah, no, it was definitely biblical in proportion.
It was just spectacular. And
about the bullshit. Yeah, and everyone should go and watch that if you get a chance. It's at Crooks and Liars.
If you haven't seen it. It was the best State of the Union response.
Ever.
And it was just.
Yeah.
His
when we talk about final. You working with the president, that's just bullshit. And that's here's bullshit. Why. And just told the truth in a way that only apparently Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert can do on television.
Proving once again that we live in totally compartmentalized realities.
Yep, we do.
And what Republicans say and do will never pay a price for it with their constituents. And they will never be called on it by the media ever, even though it is just the thinnest possible membrane. All that's required is a little nick, and it all falls apart.
And Driftglass, I hate to do this to you.
No, you don't.
I really hate to do this to
you. Yes, yes.
But there's an article this morning at HuffPost Politics.
Really?
Which I just read.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to, just land something on you. But
oh, by the way, just so our audience is aware, our listeners are aware, we ran out of time yesterday on Thursday. We're recording this Friday morning.
Yes.
So we're sort of doing this on horseback.
Yeah, on horseback, live. We're doing it live.
We're live, baby. So
but,
what do you have
there's John Ward at HuffPo wrote an article called Why Remaking the Modern Republican Party is So Damn Hard.
Yeah.
And apparently there has been a suggestion, and I don't want to get into the weeds of this article, but I think this is really funny.
Remember what happens when you tease the panther, honey.
Exactly. Don't tease the panther. Okay. Everyone, that's in Glenn Beck's novel. Don't tease the panther.
Yeah.
And it's at our house all the time. Yeah. We're always saying that.
You sure you want to tease the panther now?
You want to tease the panther now, honey?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Apparently, the idea has been floated.
Yeah.
Among some political consultants.
Yeah.
That what the Republican Party really needs to do is form their own DLC.
Oh. That's great.
We were able to moderate the party of Michael Dukakis and make it into the party of Bill Clinton and make it a moderate party.
I hear Mark Penn is looking for work.
Yeah,
so.
See, and that's it. One guy responded, though. This is what I wanted to get to.
Uh-huh.
Many of the Republicans I spoke to shared my skepticism of replicating a DLC-type effort for today's GOP.
Yeah. I believe the Republican DLC is called the DLC.
Exactly. That's the first part. But this is the quote that I just – there's two quotes.
Uh-huh.
One is from Dave Carney, a New Hampshire-based political consultant who helped run Rick Perry's presidential campaign. And he said – that a DLC type effort for today's GOP would be nice in some drug induced fifth dimension world that the folks in DC and New York City might live in. But it's not going to happen.
I absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. And by the way, there's a parallel article, I believe, over at the Daily Beast, which lost $12
million. $12 million, because, you know, we're not broke.
We're not broke, because as long as Tina Brown gets paid.
Yeah,
everybody. Tina Brown's going to get paid.
Number one, Tina Brown gets
paid.
Okay.
But there's an article over there about Republicans being, you know, in need of therapy. There's all of this, and I want you to get back to that.
Well, no, the other quote is from Mary Madeline. So I don't know if you want to hear that or not.
It hurts my brain to think.
Here's what she said.
You want to shall we do Science Fiction University where I tell you what she's going to say? And then
I don't think you could predict which this one, because went off into a land that I couldn't have predicted that you would say this.
Okay. I'm not drunk enough, so go ahead.
Why would anyone want to steer the GOP to the center? Have you been reading the Screwtape letters?
Okay. Points for a C.S. Lewis reference.
C.S. Lewis satirical take on how the devil instructs minions to deceive mankind. So that's just Satan talking.
Yeah. Wouldn't you agree, Karl Rove? Yeah, I'm sorry, Marilyn. I would agree. Deceiving people for political ends is a terrible thing. By the way, have you seen how the gays are destroying America? Maybe you want to go vote against them in 2004.
And by the way, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is going to spend $50 million on the primaries.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's great. So essentially, they're spending what the Koch brothers find in their sofa cushions.
Exactly. We're not broke, people.
We're not broke. See, we're waving our dick around. We got money.
And I did think this morning when I was driving back from dropping kids off at school, you know, if there was a buck to be made in aborted fetal tissue, the Heritage Foundation would be doing Summer of Abortion Freedom.
It would. It'd be called.
But the buck to be made is in the pro-life fundraising. That's where the buck is.
It would be called Freedom Industries.
Yeah.
And there'd be big tanks of placenta.
There would be tanks of placenta.
And you know, thanks to lack of government regulation.
We'd be talking about the freedom of the womb to be free. Right. You
free
know?
Market. You
free
know.
Market womb extraction.
If a woman chooses to sell her...
We could drill.
Yeah, we could. Oh, yeah, vagina fracking.
Drill, baby, drill. Yeah. Oh, gross.
Cervix fracking. Yeah.
Now we're getting gross on this podcast.
But this is just like, this is what happens when you just let capitalism run wild.
Yeah.
Eventually, you end up selling, you know, Soylent Green to children.
Yeah.
The difference is you now have a rationale built into the GOP that justifies every step of the way there.
Yeah.
That this is just a free market. This is a free choice. This is freedom. This is individual liberty, blah, blah, blah. And you have an army of no-neck, you know, half-wit hillbillies willing to go right along with it until they find themselves staring down the barrel of the Soylent Green factory, which is where they're all headed.
Yep.
And they suddenly realize too late, oh, you meant us. You meant you're going to eat us.
Yeah,
fuck you. We're done with you now. Bye-bye. But this doesn't surprise me. This absolutely doesn't surprise me in the slightest, because there is this... I don't know how to put this without sounding incredibly sort of grandiose and smug, but there is this desire to wrestle with the problem of one of our two major political parties being insane without ever mentioning that they're insane, because you can't mention that. So you end up with it. And I know that it's a trope we've used before, but it's absolutely accurate. It's the horribly dysfunctional alcoholic family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That does everything except mention that the problem is that dad is a violent drunk. And so we can't mention that the problem with Republican Party is it's full of Republicans.
Well, and we can't mention it because, you know, in part, you get emails 3 or 4 times a day saying, "Dear Drift, can you believe these fucking fuckers?"
Yes. Send me $3.
And they're making their $3 off of the crazy. There is a segment of the liberal political industrial complex.
Yes.
That makes bigger money than we do. Let's put it that way.
Not even close. Yeah.
Yeah. Off of outrage. Outrage. Yeah. And I'm not criticizing people who are actually trying to take the money they raise and find Democratic candidates who can win, you know, and more progressive candidates who can win. Digby's doing amazing work at really focusing on progressive races rather than just Democratic races.
Yeah.
Let's get progressives into the House of Representatives. Let's get progressives into state houses. And finding those people is really important.
And understanding that there is, I hate to use the MSNBC analogy because we're about to, you know,
well, we're about to launch into the into that.
But Andrew Sullivan, for example, has made a fine subgenre out of saying that Fox and MSNBC are exactly the same. Fox and MSNBC are both cartoonishly partisan. There's not news, they're not journalism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Because he's a conservative and he can't very well come out and say conservatives are just fucking evil. Mm-hmm. And he can't acknowledge the fact that the problem with this country is conservatives have fucked it up. And they fucked it up for a really long time. And there was a really long stretch there when hate radio and Fox News existed in a vacuum. Nobody pushed back against them. Mm-hmm. Certainly the networks didn't do it. The newspapers didn't do it. NBC didn't do it. David Gregory didn't do it. Tim Russert didn't do it. Nobody pushed back against Rush Limbaugh. They mocked him and they made fun of him on the cover of magazines. But nobody seriously pushed back on the propaganda machine mm-hmm. that Roger Ailes was building. And MSNBC, as weak and as incompetent and as foolish and as internally conflicted as it is, and it really is, it's a mess.
Yeah.
It exists to try to push back in some small way against the tide of bullshit from the right, mm-hmm. because nobody but Rachel Maddow and Jon Stewart does that.
Mm-hmm. And Chris Hayes, yeah.
And yet, and so
MSNBC, and Joy Reid, congratulations to Joy Reid for her new show.
There are
woman on television, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, she's awesome. And I even give Lawrence O'Donnell a tip of the hat every now and then. But that tiny group of people inside this gigantic corporation are the only people on television, really, with a major media presence who actually
Steve Kornacki.
Who actually push back. Well, yeah, if you want to get up at O'Dark 30 on Saturday and listen to New Jersey politics.
Politics for 2 hours. But that's really what it's become.
But really, you know, this is us on the left so hungry for someone who will just tell the fucking truth.
Yeah.
And every time someone tries, you have Andrew Sullivan or someone like that rolling in and saying, see, they're both partisan. They're both equally bad. They're both terrible. And I would like to take a slight detour because today, David Brooks proves me right once again.
His column was, once again, unbelievable. He really is trolling you, Driftglass.
He's trolling me personally.
Personally.
Now, over the years, and I mean, sorry, Charlie Pierce, I've been doing this for 10 years, coming up on 10 years now.
Yeah, didn't Charlie Pierce bitch about how he's been doing
he's
this?
He's been doing this for 3 years.
3 years, and no one's listening to him.
With it. Yeah, you've been writing in Esquire.
From my post at Esquire, no one's listening
No one's listening. I've been doing this for coming up 10 years, Charlie Pierce. anyway. And nothing taken away from Charlie. He's a great writer. I read him. But
David Brooks has been trolling you.
My theory has always been that David Brooks just gave up on reality.
Mm-hmm.
He just filed for divorce against reality for loss of consortium. And it won't sleep with him anymore. Because he had this, you know, he went all in with slandering liberals. He went all in with slamming people like me, calling people like me a traitor, calling me people like a bad American or a buffoon or idiot or an imbecile. And all in with George Bush. George Bush was the great man who was going to come along and make his great man theory of history work. And it all went horribly wrong. Every crackpot theory that David Brooks embraced blew up in his face. Every foreign adventure he embraced turned out to be the exact disaster liberals told him it would be. And rather than apologizing or walking any of it back, because he's a conservative and therefore congenitally a liar, he simply pretended he never wrote any of it and went into a different line of business, which I refer to as Whig fan fiction.
Yeah.
In which he is simply rewriting conservative history to ignore the fact that the last 20 years ever happened. There was never a Phyllis Schlafly. There's never a Rush Limbaugh. Both sides are somehow always equally to blame for everything. And if only some moderate third way could be found that
which is made up of country club Republicans who don't have to give up anything on taxes.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah.
And he cannot admit on pain of death, he will never admit that the problem with this country is the Republican Party, because he's one of the people that made the problem happen in the first place. And as a public intellectual, how much, you know, his lifespan would be zero as a public intellectual if he had to admit that, by the way, for the last 30 years, I've been fucking wrong about everything. And because he has enough friends in the media, enough very, very, very rich Upper West Side New York friends who protect him from ever having any consequence to being wrong about anything, David Brooks is free to write whatever the fuck he wants. So he has decided, since he can't write about how awesome George Bush is anymore, or how tax cuts won't cause deficits anymore, or how we've already won in Iraq and don't you liberals feel silly anymore, since he can't really write about that shit anymore, he's going to write about centrism and how conservatives want this and liberals want that. And if only somebody came down the middle who wanted both these things and was modest and thoughtful. And
but the special, special thing about today's column, Friday's column, was that he actually calls it the Whig Party.
He does. He does. He actually, I, like I said, I have been calling David Brooks's bullshit Whig fan fiction for years.
For years.
I've been saying that David Brooks is in the business of writing a completely fake history for years. And his column today advises, since conservatives want one thing and liberals want another, and President Obama, for reasons that David Brooks never mentions and doesn't seem to quite understand, can't quite form a governing coalition to get anything done.
Hmm. I wonder why.
In the entire column, the word Republican isn't mentioned once.
That's not allowed.
Just for some reason that has to do with the weather and the alignment of the planets, for some reason, Barack Obama can't get anything passed. So he urges Barack Obama to literally give up on trying and go on tour, and I'm quoting now, President Obama could travel the country modernizing the Whig impulse, questioning current divisions, and eroding the rigid battle lines. More concretely, he could create a group of Simpson-Bowles-type commissions with legislators, mayors, and governors, and others brought together to offer concrete proposals on mobility issues, et cetera, et cetera. He goes through, weren't the Whigs awesome? Weren't the Whigs great? They had all the right answers. And if only Barack Obama would give up trying to be president because for some inexplicable reason he can't get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
And just go around the country touring because what he needs to do is make the job easier for the next president who will come in and be able to govern with a Whig governing coalition. And I mean, he's finally done it. He's finally just said, look, I'm never going to tell you what's wrong with this country, because if I did that, I'd be the first one up against the wall during the revolution.
Yep.
I'm never going to admit any of the shit I did. So I'm going to invent this fictional Whig Party, and I'm going to advise the president of the United States to join it and go around the country touring and boosting the Whig virtues and the Whig values. So
I think he's just lost his mind.
It's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
And this is just me doing my little end zone dance going, I told you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and any magazines out there who would like to
hire you as a writer, you're not going to move to New York City, though.
No, but you can get me for a tenth of what you pay Tina Brown, maybe a 20th of what you pay Tina Brown to ruin your magazine. You can get me for a fraction of what David Brooks has paid. And I have the virtue of not being completely fucking wrong all the time.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my little end zone dance.
I would like to ask you what you thought of the State of the Union minus all of the responses.
Oh.
Can we talk about it in a vacuum for a moment?
Absolutely.
And then we'll talk about how lawless it was.
Yeah. the speech itself, if you're sort of zipping between planets and you just were skipping past the Earth and tuned in, you would hear a genial, humorous attempt to bring up a whole bunch of liberal issues in a very modest way, going down your minimum wage, rights for women. Hey, wouldn't it be nice if people could vote? That'd be cool. Immigration reform, sort of ticking off the list of things that the people who elected him believe in and saying, look, you don't have to agree with me, but you have to at least propose something.
You have to try.
You have to try to govern.
Yeah.
You can't just shut the government down and then, you know, sit on your hands and pretend that your job and then expect us to pretend that it's okay that you're destroying the government and then running on the fact the government has been destroyed. The arsonists.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're sitting there at the edge of the fire going, ain't it a pity that thing burned? And you're pouring gasoline on it. And he didn't say any of that, because he was trying to be genial and funny. He turned around and made John Boehner look good, for God's
sake. Yeah, he did.
So it was not a memorable speech in terms of soaring rhetoric, but it did what a good State of the Union does. It was pleasant. It touched all the right notes. And it was uncontroversial. Living in a sane alternate universe, that speech would have been completely uncontroversial. It didn't propose rolling tanks into some foreign country. It didn't propose, hey, let's slash taxes. It didn't propose nationalizing industries. It didn't propose anything on any extreme edge of anything. It said, hey, if you can't help me out here, I'm going to, with my pen, increase the minimum wage for people who work for the federal government by a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that apparently
was lawless.
Is tyranny.
Yeah.
From people who sat quietly on their hands or applauded, as George Bush did his executive orders, as Ronald Reagan did his. This has never been a controversy before. It's never been a problem until the black guy, the black Democrat, decided he would try to get something done because the Congress decided it was going to shut down for 4 years and never let him do a fucking
8 years.
Thing. Eight years.
Yep.
Well, 5 years and counting. So I thought it was a fairly uncontroversial thing, which the right that really exists, not the right that David Brooks pretends exists, completely flipped out. Completely lost their shit over nothing, because the history of the last 5 years has been one, from Acorn to Bill Ayers, the new Black Panther Party, has been one completely invented hysterical crisis after another that every wingnut believes is absolutely gospel, and everyone who's not a wingnut knows is completely fucking made up. And those two worlds no longer even touch each other. So
I want to talk about this exercise in language that you talked with me about earlier this week.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking, rather than poor, we would talk about unemployed versus gay.
Yeah.
Because unemployment insurance, that issue has not been resolved.
No, it has now. It's been resolved. It's been cut off.
Yeah. And you were talking to me about how gay rights found a number of slogans. Now, I want to warn everyone, this is an exercise. This is not arguing for policy.
No, but it's a thought experiment.
It's a thought experiment that the gay political movement, the same-sex marriage political movement, the rights for homosexuals political movement, the LGBT movement, period.
That civil rights movement.
That civil rights movement has been very good at getting slogans out there and chants and making wordplay part of what they do. And
is that what they call it? Is that what the kids are calling it these days?
I guess.
Wordplay? Yeah. But making their message clear, succinct.
Clear and understandable in a single sentence or phrase.
Right.
We're here, we're queer, get used to it. Gay and proud. Silence equals death was a rallying cry about
AIDS
research.
Yeah.
And very effective.
Tip of the hat to the effectiveness of the way they messaged their very important legitimate.
And this is a question of messaging. That's what we're talking about. And you said to me, you know, what if we substituted unemployed or poor or, you know, and again, these are things that people are taught to be ashamed of.
Right.
Unlike gay people or LGBT people, the unemployed aren't born that way and don't have.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are.
They are.
More and more,
you are dependent on the wealth of your parents for your future prospects. Yes.
More and more, we have a class system where if you're born poor, you're going to stay poor.
You're not going to work your way up. Right. But you mentioned this, you know, we're here, we're unemployed, get used to it. And the fact is that they're asking us to get used to it.
Yeah, that's now policy. That's not something to be ashamed of. That's just the way things are. Deal with it.
Yep. And you're lazy.
You're lazy. Well, that's the thing.
You're unmotivated.
On the right, the moral language doesn't change at all.
No.
Because on the right, if you're poor or if you're unemployed, it's because you're morally defective. And you're a loser, just like being gay.
Right.
And what you need is to suffer some more. You need someone to kick you harder. And if we just kicked you hard enough in the right place, eventually you'd get the fuck over being gay or unemployed, and you'd get on with being a normal American.
Mm-hmm.
You straighten up and marry a woman, or you'd get a job. That's what you need. You need to be kicked harder. You need to be punished. And eventually you'll straighten up and fly right. That's the language on the right for everything. For everything they disagree with, it's moral failing. On the left, it's much more complicated.
Yeah.
Because on the left, nobody wants to be poor. Nobody wants to be unemployed.
Right.
Nobody wants to stay
that
way.
Nobody wants to permanently identify with being a member of that group. Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
And so, but you can say silence equals death. You can say silence on the fact that I heard on Morning Joe this morning.
Oh, no.
That over half of America lives paycheck to paycheck now.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
And you and I looked at each other and went, paycheck?
Paycheck? What?
Paycheck? Wow.
I remember those. I remember putting money in the bank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the thing. I mean,
you'll never hear unemployed and proud.
No.
Poor and proud. And if you're poor, or if you are unemployed, long-term unemployed, especially, frankly, long-term unemployed over 45.
Yep.
Because that's a real, that's a hardcore group, man. I'm in that group. That's a hardcore group.
Yeah.
And I know my former job gave me so much knowledge about labor markets that I, like a doctor with a, you know, bad diagnosis, I'm unable to fool myself into thinking things are better than they are because I know better.
Yeah.
But you're never going to hear, you know, the unemployed don't have their own flag. Poor people don't have their own flag. They don't have a network of lobbyists and influencers and wealthy benefactors. You can't call up your unemployed friend and get a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're never going to have unemployed breakthrough roles on television. Poor people on TV.
He was unemployed, and look at him now. He's on TV.
There's never going to be Will and Grace for poor people,
or even a reality show for poor people.
No, well, I'm sure there will be, honey.
Yes, yes.
I'm sure there will be.
Yes.
But
not a reality show about going and getting fuel assistance, waiting in the fuel assistance office, or waiting in the DHS office.
Exactly.
They're not going to have a reality show about that.
Or looking for work and sending out the 1,000th resume and expecting to fail and failing.
Yeah. The show, at least you're not that poor.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Operation Breadline.
Chances are you are.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing.
And if you are gay and you want to stay in the closet, you can.
Mm-hmm.
It's painful, but you can certainly put on the front.
Like our totally not gay congressman, Aaron Schock.
Yes, he's not. He's just a very fancy
Lindsey
dresser.
Graham.
Sharp dresser. Lindsey Graham is not gay. I don't know why people keep saying that.
Hey, man.
But you can put on a front.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can absolutely, you can buy a front that will let you pass if you choose to.
Yeah.
But if you're poor, you can't pretend to not be poor.
Yeah.
Because you're poor.
Yeah.
And as they, it was the heist, I think, whatever it was a David Mamet film.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's why they call it money. Everybody needs money. That's why they call it money. So just the thought experiment of how radically different we react and how different it is when you're a member of a group that has lots of people who are like you, who work in D.C.,
And that's in Angels in America too.
Uh-huh.
The I'm not gay. I just fuck guys.
Yeah. Oh, that was Roy Cohn. That was actually the trope. I am using that word twice now. The example I use for Andrew Sullivan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Andrew Sullivan's not a conservative. He's just a guy who says lots of conservative things. But it was that I'm not gay. I just fuck guys because gays
don't get their phone answered by the president of the United States.
Gays can't take their boyfriend to the White House, but I can. Therefore, I'm not gay. Therefore, I can't possibly be dying of a disease that affects gay people.
Right.
Which is genius. I mean, it was just like, man, did that sum up a mindset perfectly.
Yep.
And so there are lots of people in the entertainment industry, in every industry, and certainly working in Washington, D.C., who help their friends. But there are no poor people working as congressional aides.
Yeah.
There are no poor people. There's no chronically unemployed people who can be called upon to get their other friends work in a Senate staff office or in a lobbying organization. There's no entree for you if you're poor. And that's where the analogy breaks down, because there should be.
Yes.
Because it should, you know, the whole idea of social mobility, the whole idea that you can work your way into a place that's better for you and your children, and that the government should be oriented in such a way that maximizes the ability for you to do that, is something that we talk about, that David Brooks talks about, but that the right has no intention of permitting. Because the feudal state, where a few very, very rich Koch brother type people own everything, and the rest of us are pitted against each other in a Hobbesian war of all against all, to drive wages down, 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 down. Because the more you can pit working people against each other, the lower you can get wages, the cheaper you can get labor, and the richer the rich become.
Mm-hmm.
That's the plan. It's not exactly a mystery. That is the fucking plan. And the fact that there are no countervailing forces, powerful countervailing forces, is not a surprise, because they have all the money.
Right. That's the way they call it, money.
And we used to have a powerful labor movement.
Yeah.
That had money, that could go toe to toe.
For working people.
And it had its problems, and it had its...
Who made their income off of wages. I think that's the part, that's the great divide now.
Yeah.
Is people who make their money off of the their hands.
Right.
Labor.
Yeah.
And those who, the investor class. And the investor class runs the government and runs the economy.
And runs all of the GOP and half of the Democratic Party.
Yep. And Harvard economist Lawrence Katz, as you mentioned in our notes, says that the denial of long-term unemployment benefits for 1.3 million Americans, including more than 200,000 military veterans, that costs our economy $1 billion a week.
Yeah.
We are not broke.
And
it's the austerity, stupid.
Yeah. This is not, this is a decision we make.
Yeah.
And every time you hear a Republican or a conservative or your idiot friend at the bar talk about the deficit, ask them where the hell they were when Dick Cheney was telling us deficits don't matter.
Yep.
Where were they when Dick Cheney was saying Ronald Reagan taught us deficits don't matter? Where were they when George W. Bush ran for the White House promising to get rid of our budget surplus? Where was all this fucking concern for the national good and the national treasury? And oh my goodness, we're larding all this onto the backs of our children when Republicans were creating this problem. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, there were no people with tricorner hats protesting. There was not a Republican movement. There were a few libertarians, I'll give them credit for this, who were angry about it. But the 60 million people and change who went out in 2004, 10 years ago, to vote George W. Bush in for a second term, didn't give a shit about deficits. They only got interested in deficits when the black guy became president. And suddenly, deficits were the worst thing in the world, along with Benghazi and IRS and Fast and Furious and a bunch of other made-up bullshit that would be a rounding error in the actual criminal record, the actual treasonous record of the Bush administration, which they never cared about.
Yeah.
But the problem is, of course, there is no venue for us to have this engagement with those people.
That's what I want to get to next, because I bogarted Chris Hayes's Facebook page last week. And Chris Hayes begged his viewers to like him on his Facebook fan page, which actually has some very good comments on it. I really appreciated people leaving comments there and reading those comments.
So needy, Chris Hayes. So
needy. And he made a funny joke about, you know, if I don't have enough Facebook followers, my daughter is going to, you know, when she goes off into outer space on her iPhone, is going to, look down on me from space. Yeah. So, but there was a woman named Anne who left a comment at Chris Hayes' Facebook page, and I replied to her and asked if I could read part of her comment on the air. And she wrote back to me and said, yes, thank you very much, Anne. Okay. And thank you, Chris Hayes, for having a Facebook page where smart liberals are leaving comments. One of the comments that came up over and over again on Chris Hayes' website on his Facebook page that I thought was really good is, stop talking about birth control as a women's issue.
Right.
And I thought that was really important that, you know, men are part of this process of birth control.
Yes.
And families are. These are family decisions that are made.
It's almost like it's family planning of some kind.
It's almost like it's planning your family. And it's almost as if women who send their children to Sunday school use contraception because economically they want to feed the children they have.
Right, right. It's a way of planning your parenthood.
Nice girls do. Yes. Nice girls do. And frankly, I mean, this is the thing that gets me is this, I don't want to pay for somebody else's libido. That's the argument that's being made.
That lots of bitter, old, white, conservative men make because they're never going to get laid again, frankly.
But, you know, back during the Bush administration was when I was using contraception.
Uh-huh.
And my husband, my ex-husband now, but my husband's Blue Cross insurance that he got from employment covered contraception.
Without controversy. Right,
without controversy.
This was not controversial 10 years ago. This wasn't.
The reason I remember that is because I remember saying to the pharmacist, you know, I'm kind of surprised this is covered.
Uh-huh.
And he said, and we were in Alabama. So, you know, that's why we were surprised.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of surprised this is covered. He said, yeah, I'm kind of surprised too, but it is 100%. Here you go.
Here you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, it wasn't about my libido as much as my husband's libido. That needed to be, you know, that's the thing is, are we going to tell women?
At this point, you should know, I'm just listening to music in the background waiting for the discussion of your previous marriage to stop.
Because it's just making you
mad. It hurts. No, this is absolutely 100% accurate.
Why are we telling women that their husbands don't have a right to have sex without procreation?
Yeah.
Hello?
Because that's what Jesus said.
No, he didn't. He never said anything such a thing.
Well,
Anne, I want to get back to Anne's comment.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Because it really dovetails into what you're talking about in terms of winning an argument.
Yeah.
And the fact that we can't have these kind of conversations anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. So the State of the Union is a perfect example of this.
Yep. And Anne writes, we have to find the courage to call the extreme right out on their hypocrisy. We must call those hiding behind religion on the lack of thoughtful and reality-based ideas. We as liberals must use the same tactic that they so successfully keep their flock in line with on the right. Say it, and then say it again. Keep it simple. Do not complicate our message. Democrats too often spend too much time defending and explaining their views. Republicans never explain. They just have a view.
Uh-huh.
It's sad, but successful. Most people do not listen long enough to hear the final point. But when I read that, I thought this is a really good springboard to a conversation. And then I read it again and thought, who are we trying to call the extreme right out to? Who are we talking to?
Yeah.
When we do that.
To whom are we making this case?
Yeah.
And the answer, and this is, again, this goes back to, there's no more we're making an eloquent case. Let's step back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I've been blogging now for going on 9 years. You've been blogging for 10.
Mm-hmm.
For 10 years, lots of people on the left, hundreds who are dozens who are bloggers, hundreds who are blog interested commenters, thousands who are activists, millions who are voters, people who write their editorial pages, people who call in their congressmen, people who make their voice known in whatever way they can, have in fact kept their message simple,
mm-hmm.
been very clear about what they want, and have worked tirelessly to do exactly this, to call the extreme right out on their hypocrisy. And it hasn't worked. And it hasn't worked because we are not permitted to have access to a public venue that would be large enough and have an audience of interested people where this discussion will be fruitful. The right will never debate us.
Define worked. What do you mean by worked? Because Barack Obama was elected twice.
Yes, he was.
So
he was absolutely elected twice.
Define what it means to, how would you,
how would you
consider yourself a success as a liberal communicating this?
Two ways.
Okay.
It becomes a generally accepted principle of culture.
Mm-hmm.
That the conservative movement in this country and the Republican Party as a manifestation of the conservative movement in this country are largely to blame for most of our problems.
Mm-hmm. And it's not both sides.
That they are a failure, that their failure is on purpose, that the reason our government is in gridlock is because the Republican Party wants to destroy the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
That is their absolutely clear aim. It has been their clear aim forever. They have a war on poor people, and their entire manifesto has been geared to this goal, and they're very successful at it. Legislatively, I would like to see some legislation passed that seriously addresses climate change.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to have a debate about climate change. In a sane universe, when 99.99% of the global scientific community all agrees that this thing exists, it's bad, it's getting worse, and we must act now. The reaction would be, all right, let's discuss how we will cope with this problem. That's the debate we should have.
I don't want to distract you too much from the issue of the conversation.
Right.
But I think there's a bigger problem with climate change, which is climate change for most average people is just too big an issue and requires too much of a lifestyle change for most people to accept. And if we would change the focus of this conversation to clean air, clean water, clean land, clean food.
I agree. And
then
you've been saying that
for a long time, but you work on it in a micro sense rather than the macro sense. And scientists aren't going to do that. They're going to look at it in terms of temperature change over hundreds of years. And most people don't think they can make a difference. And they do curbside recycling and use, try to conserve gas and try to do, clean their lawns and make things look nice.
Because the kids give them a dirty look if they don't.
Yeah. But people are trying. And I think individuals don't feel, although they should. I mean, this is the thing that gets me is if people realized what they're doing when they vote for Republican statehouse,
yes,
what they are doing to their own lives, They would, as you put it, go in the basement and with a gun and put themselves out of their own misery.
Because they, but let's stick with climate change just for a second.
Okay.
Anthropogenic climate change, human caused climate change. Everything you just said is reasonable and true. It flows from a recognition that this phenomenon is real.
Yes, it does.
It's a method of coping with a problem.
Yeah.
The fact
politically,
that the
politically,
fact that we, politically and socially and at a school level, you know, getting kids involved, all of these are coping mechanisms for dealing with what we all agree is a real problem. But the problem is, we don't agree it's a real problem.
No, apparently
not. There is an entire group of people in this country who firmly believe, who will go to their graves, who will swear on the lives of their children, which is exactly what they're doing. That this is not a problem. It's a hoax invented by a bunch of scientists who want grant money. That's why we can't have the conversation we need to have, because there are people who are incredibly well-funded, who are devoted completely to destroying the ability to have any kind of debate about anything.
Yeah.
Because if we actually had a direct engagement, they would lose.
Yeah.
Therefore, their job is to make sure that Fox World stays completely hermetically sealed.
Yeah, well, that was the other point I wanted to make. She said at the end of her comment, most people do not listen long enough to hear the final point. But you and I get our what Hannity said last night from Hannity.
Yeah.
You and I get what Rush Limbaugh said from Rush Limbaugh. We get what we listen to what they say and report on it.
Yes.
And people who watch Fox News, it has been determined as a fact that people who watch Fox News do not watch other networks or other shows or listen to other sources.
Yes.
For their
and
news.
And they get dumber every year.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, Rush and Limbaugh that's... listeners do not. Well, first of all, they don't have a liberal radio station to turn to.
No.
But they don't get their news or their opinions from other sources. They don't get both sides.
They don't.
Unquote.
They think they do. What they get is Rush Limbaugh's opinion. Rush Limbaugh, remember, has been on the air for a quarter of a century. A quarter of a century. This asshole, this racist, gas bag, lying douche has been on the air, broadcasting on hundreds and hundreds of stations all across this great land of ours, unimpeded for 25 years, for a quarter of a century. And thanks to Ronald Reagan. Thanks directly to Ronald Reagan. Killing the Fairness Doctrine, that's what turned these monsters loose. That's one of the many, many ways that, Reagan destroyed this country. So Rush Limbaugh's been in the air for 25 years. What if you're a Rush Limbaugh listener, what do you hear every day? You hear Rush Limbaugh expounding on some conservative theory of government or another that is bullshit. And then you hear Rush Limbaugh's interpretation of what liberals are like. You never hear from an actual liberal. You never hear from an actual progressive. You never know that we work, that we raise kids, that most of us go to church, that we're a lot like you. You will never hear that on the right, ever. What you hear about what conservatives understand about liberals is what they hear filtered through Rush Limbaugh's intestinal system. What we understand about conservatives is what we hear them say.
Yeah.
So we have a very clear understanding of what the right is and what the left is and what the right's doing and why they're doing it. But for example, a simple example, way on the other end of the spectrum, Andrew Sullivan is never going to debate someone like me about conservatism because about 3 minutes into it, he would be crying like a little baby and he'd run away because I can make Andrew Sullivan look like a complete moron. David Brooks is never going to engage on the nature of conservatism with anybody who's not one of his rich friends ever. There and right down the line from that very liberal sort of point of view, from that one end of the conservative spectrum to the Ann Coulter end of the conservative spectrum, no one in that universe is ever going to honestly engage with liberals because they would lose. The reason that they have a Southern strategy was to win elections. They want to win. Congratulations, you've imported the entire bigoted, scummy class of Americans into your party, and you win elections. You want to argue about the utility of doing that? You want to argue about the destructive nature of doing that? You can get occasionally, you can get a former RNC chair who swore on a stack of Bibles that there was no Southern strategy. Occasionally, you can get an expatriate, an outcast Republican to admit that such a thing existed and it's bad. But among the active people, the people who are setting policy or the people who are forcing politicians to do certain things, among the teabagger right, the Rush Limbaugh right, you are never going to get them to debate you on anything. It doesn't matter how persistent you are. It doesn't matter how simple your message is. It doesn't matter how clear it is. They're never going to acknowledge that you have anything to say, period. That's half the problem. The other half of the problem is our both sides media, our corporate media, who will never do what Jon Stewart does every night. Point a camera at them and say, they're crazy. At no point will David Gregory, who I will mention once on this podcast, do anything but aid and abet Rush Limbaugh,
yeah.
aid and abet Fox News. Because behind every, because it take a typical Fox News viewer and corner him at a cocktail party and pick one issue and peel him like an onion, skin him right down to the point where he has to admit that on whatever the fuck issue you want to choose, he was lied to. He was wrong. He got his facts wrong. His things are his predicate is false. If you devote that amount of time and energy and focus and aggression, you can usually push a conservative into a corner where they have to admit that Sean Hannity lied or Rush Limbaugh lied or Bill O'Reilly lied.
And then they say both sides.
And then the next thing out of their mouth is, yeah, but liberals are worse.
Both sides do it.
Now, where do they get this bullshit idea? Because that is the big lie. That's the big lie that makes all the little lies possible. And if you want to know where they get this lie, watch Meet the Press any fucking Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see a parade of the politically undead plotting across the American media landscape, farting out both sides, both sides, both sides, over and over and over again for year after year after year.
Let's talk about compartmentalization then.
Yeah.
And this is what I mean by the compartmentalization of NBC, MSNBC, which is, yes, the liberals get their Melissa Harris-Perry.
Yeah.
And Melissa Harris-Perry was in a panel discussion that was long but well worth listening to. It was linked at Crooks and Liars. She was talking with Bell Hooks about all kinds of things. But one of the things she said that to me was very telling was she said, I am in the position I am in because a powerful white man allows me to be on television and say words.
Yes.
And
yep. Absolutely.
That's it. And so she gets her little space on Sunday morning and, you know, Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes and those folks get their little time.
Yes, they do.
But that is paid for, frankly, by the hours that are paid for by the military-industrial complex, which and Wall Street, which is Morning Joe and Meet the Press. And those are, you know, it's not just the compartmentalization between Fox News and MSNBC that we need to talk about.
Exactly.
It's the compartmentalization within the liberal media that we have, quote unquote, to pay for, to make Archer Daniels Midland happy.
Yes.
they've got their hour. And
let me use this analogy a long time ago, but let me repeat it. The Rachel Maddow show is as if Greenpeace had a tiny corner office at ExxonMobil's headquarters.
Right. Exactly.
It's this weird juxtaposition of NBC is David Gregory and Chuck Todd and these just lying douchebags who get away with both sides, both sides, both sides. And then you have this in itty bitty corner.
That's
you have,
their job is to have that, is to say that to make their sponsors happy.
I mean,
sponsors.
And if you can't get David Brooks on your show, you'll read his column aloud on your show.
Yep.
And that's what the biggest public interest program in America, with the longest and biggest in America, does as its business model. That's what they do. Their job is to reinforce the DC Beltway notion that both sides are always wrong, that nothing Ted Cruz says is so ridiculous that someone on the left, I'm sure, didn't say something equally bad. That's David Gregory's job description.
Mm-hmm.
And then you flip over to their sister station at MSNBC, and you hear Chris Matthews berating not just Ted Cruz for being nuts, but and you know what really drives me crazy is the moderator let him get away with it. How's that happen? That's crazy. You know, this was Ted Cruz saying that he had nothing to do with the government shutdown at all.
And that
it was Barack Obama and Harry Reid, which is just, you know, is such errant bullshit.
And to his credit, Bob Schieffer laughed at him for saying that.
Yes.
And I think when you take over the news cycle for 3 weeks plus to shut down the government and everyone knows it was you and you got tremendous coverage of your activity from the news media for doing that. You were rewarded by the news media for doing that. You raised funds off of doing that. And then to come back and say, well, you know, I didn't do it. It wasn't me. It was Obama. That is a personal insult to the Beltway.
But here's the difference. You know, Chris Matthews, for just a nanosecond, beat up his own profession.
Yeah, yeah.
Now let's remember, those of us with long memories will remember that Chris Matthews is the guy who engineered Phil Donahue's firing
yep.
at MSNBC because he was a liberal. And Chris Matthews was a big Iraq war proponent. And he was afraid that Phil Donahue would get some of that liberal stink on him.
Yep.
So he got him fired from that. And that at the time was the highest rated show on MSNBC. And it was during the height of the Iraq, you know, fervor. It was the height of, you know, Bush worship. And Chris Matthews gutted his own colleague to advance his own career. So let's not pretend that Chris Matthews is anything but a self-serving, self-interested careerist, because he is. But for a moment, on my liberal TV, he actually faulted the person who was letting Ted Cruz get away with lying on his air. Now let's flip that around. Once upon a time, Lawrence O'Donnell had Joe Walsh on his show. Deadbeat dad Joe Walsh. And he then had a long rant about, I'm never having him on my show again because he's a liar. I'm not going to put a liar on my show. He's lying to you. He's lying. And I refuse to put a liar on the air again and let him get away with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to bet Ted Cruz is going to be on Meet the Press in the next month?
Sure.
You want to bet they're going to have Newt Gingrich back on? A pathological liar like Newt Gingrich, whose punishment for being a sociopath, a bomb thrower, a liar, and the engineer who created hate speech, modern hate speech, serial adulterer and grifter, is we put him on Meet the Press every month to refurbish his reputation.
Yeah.
And then give him his own show on CNN. That's the media that's not even Fox News. That's the centrist media. That's the place where, in a sane universe, we would have this engagement of who's right and who's wrong and who's lied and who didn't. They'll never do that. So I agree with the sentiment that we should hold these people accountable. I'm just at a bit of a loss. I'm not going to stop, but I'm at a bit of a loss that after 10 years of doing that, we've made no crease in the right, no dent in the right. But more importantly, we have not convinced anyone in the middle to stop putting Harold Ford Jr. on television.
Yep.
And that's what's so troubling about this, is that it's not that the right has never been held accountable. It's that the people who are supposed to hold them accountable have never been held accountable.
I want to do a programming note here and say that we've had some requests from people from time to time.
Stop swearing. I'm not going
to
do that.
No, to talk about overseas news, to talk about foreign policy. And that's just not our wheelhouse. However, I promise you that our son, Junior Dude, will be doing a podcast on foreign policy
before too long.
Before the decade's out, because
now if we ever wanted to do a show on employment, underemployment, sectoral stuff, manufacturing, and worker retraining, I can do days on that.
Yep.
But I just can't. I just don't. I that's not something that I think that I've heard any feedback. If that's something you all want to hear about, let us know.
I had 15 minutes with the kids this morning, getting them to school, and had a very long lecture to me about what is going on with the Syrian peace talks and the rebels and
yes.
From this Junior is Dude. Something that fascinates Junior Dude because he likes good guys and bad guys.
Yes.
And stories of heroism.
Yes.
And revolt and rebellion.
Yes. Star Wars. So, everything has to be Star Wars.
Kind of. Yeah. But it's very based in reality and news. And he's very interested in knowing specifically, you know, what John Kerry said and what is Assad doing and what are the rebels doing?
And his impulse is so cool.
Yeah.
It's so interesting.
It's so genuinely pro-democracy. Genuinely pro-democracy.
And I don't want to blunt it in any way. So I always encourage him. I talk to him about it. We have really wonderful conversations about history and, you know, about things that happen that are less well-known historic.
And then school is helping too, because he's reading Greek myth now, you know, which is, of course, hero stories all over again.
But I do try to temper a little bit of it, not to throw cold water on, but to ask him to think about how complicated things can get when, if you're anti-dictator and you live in a country that's in the middle of a Cold War, and you're creating dictators, you're propping up bad people because you think that they'll help you oppose the worst people.
Yeah.
And then
and getting into proxy wars. I mean, yeah. I think talking about proxy wars with him has been a really helpful thing.
Like, yeah.
Why are we funding this person? And why is Russia funding the guy that we think is bad?
And why do Iranians, why are they so hacked off at us? Well, we overthrew their government.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's part of the conversation that is hard. It's not hard to define, but it's hard to when he wants good guys and bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say, well, there's good guys and bad guys, and there's real politik.
And then there's the Shah. Yeah. and he was not a good guy, and we funded him. And
so how do
there
you
haven't forgotten that? A lot of people here have forgotten that.
Yeah.
People there haven't forgotten that.
No.
So anyway, I didn't want to get off on that tangent, but I did want to say we understand that there is a need to talk about divestment in Israel. We understand that there are issues that need to be talked about.
Yes.
They aren't in our wheelhouse. They aren't part of this podcast.
This is it's
we
stuff
appreciate
we,
that these issues are important.
And it's stuff that we do talk about at around the house.
Or on the dinner table.
Liberals.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think we could be – I couldn't hold forth like a John Cole on foreign policy.
Yeah.
I can't talk about –
And there are great liberal blogs on foreign policy. There really are.
That we read, but we are – and at some point – I'd rather not stick my nose, shall we say, to be polite about it, into the middle of an issue that's been going on for 10 years or 20 years or 2,000 years that about which I don't know enough to formulate an opinion and be raged at by everybody that clearly you're wrong and you're a tool of fill in the blank of whichever side you disagree with. So I'm just going to avoid that for now. And
and one other programming note, Driftglass, you got a message this week from a potential listener who decided they're not going to listen to us.
Well, yeah.
Because
she doesn't like
your Photoshop of the professional left, which is from the movie The Professional.
Professionals. It's the movie poster from The Professional.
From The Professional, which shows a very short female and a very tall male and
hugging.
His arms around her and it's me and I've got a microphone held up to my mouth, which she claims is your manhood, which I had never thought of that before in my life. I'd never even considered that was what was going on there.
Yeah.
And why was I made so diminutive and
why was I
towering over me?
Right. And she wrote me this. I would listen. I might listen if you changed your graphic because it's so obvious that you're blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I believe my response to her was, well, alrighty then.
Well, it said so much about the person writing the comment that.
Well, and she wrote back going, well, if she's a dwarf, that's one thing. But still, I think
if she's a dwarf, that's one thing. Well, you know what? This is the comment that I wanted to remind everyone.
Uh-huh.
When you look at the picture, and you can go Google this, of Hillary Clinton meeting Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Uh-huh.
That is the height difference between us.
Yes, it really is.
It really is.
No kidding.
No kidding.
It's not the height, but it's the height difference.
The height difference is over a foot, well over a foot.
And I'm cruising through the internet 3-4 years ago, and I see this poster for – I'm looking for a graphic for The Professional Left.
And there's The Professional.
And I look and see this sort of edgy alleyway outsider couple who are the height difference that we are. I thought, oh, that's perfect.
And it is perfect.
And I've put a top hat on him once or twice.
For the wedding. Yeah.
That's about it. And thus far, I have not had
a single comment apart from that one saying, you know, you're making her diminutive and putting her in a sexual slavery type.
Well, that's not quite what she said, but it was what she implied.
Okay. Well, no, he really is that much taller than I am. And I'm just speaking into a microphone in that picture.
Yeah.
That's all that's happening. So
I have a feeling that if we opened up a file of Rorschach tests, this person would say, why do you have all these dick pictures in here? What? You're the one with all these perverted pictures, not me. Yeah. So you know, read into whatever you like, wherever you like. And I appreciate the fact that you stopped by. But no, I'm not going to change the graphic. And yeah, that's a real accurate representation of pretty much how we stroll arm in arm wherever we're out in public and our height difference. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Deal. So deal with it.
One last thing. Bible Bitch just wants to comment on the fact that I didn't hear anyone at the 700 Club this week say that the snowstorm in Atlanta and Birmingham was sent because of the way the South treats the gays.
Yeah, I didn't hear that. Even though...
Every time a bigoted Southerner says the South will rise again, God sends a snowflake. Oh, God, two whole inches on Atlanta.
To stop them from moving. And I got to give a hat tip Chris Hardwick, who, among many, many other people, noticed the striking similarity between the poster for The Walking Dead.
Yeah, and someone did Photoshop that ultimately. Yeah,
because it was a bunch of people fleeing Atlanta and, you know, a packed highway and nobody moving.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we're sorry for our brothers and sisters south of that Manson-Nixon line.
Well, and I've been in Birmingham when it snows. And, you know, if there is white stuff on the ground, everything shuts down.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, the governor and the mayor are saying, you know, we tried to be prepared and we weren't. The grocery stores were emptied of milk and bread.
Yeah.
Somebody
knew.
Did prepare.
Somebody knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And so, Chicago, you know, being that I am more or less from Chicago, wasn't born there, but I spent a chunk of my life there. The politics of snowfall is a real thing.
Is a real thing. And they're about to find out how real it is. Yeah.
We get it. But it's weird that when the apocalyptic God vengeance smiting stuff visits places where there are lots of Bible Belt folks, nobody ascribes that to. They just look out the window and say, global warming my ass.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Katie. And Katie's friend says that some coworkers and I captured her and her sister Emily as ferals when they were about 6 weeks old. They were too old to properly socialize, but we did manage to form an attachment. Be aware that the wet spot on Katie's forehead is because she likes to lean her head against the dome of her kitty water fountain when she drinks.
Yes.
You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties say that when God closes a door, fuck that! Open the damn door!
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Our friend at Magnolia ePublishing has sent us another audio Science Fiction University.
Cool. I love these.
Yeah,
right.
And they're really fun. All right. So what these are actual audio clips from a movie or television show. And Magnolia ePublishing has bleeped out one of the words. And so you are to guess or know what the word that's bleeped out is.
Uh-huh.
And these are famous lines, so you shouldn't have too hard a time. And also, what is the movie or TV show?
Okay.
Attack of the Killer T-O's. Attack of the Killer T-O's. They'll beat you.
That's Attack of the Killer Tomatoes from Gone with the Wind.
It's not from Gone with the Wind.
No.
It's from Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Yes. That was
1978. Yeah. All right. Comedy horror film. All right. Number two.
The last man on Earth always carries an automatic weapon because the last man on Earth is not alone.
Is not alone. And what movie is that from?
I believe that's from one of the many, many remakes of I Am Legend. This one, the Charlton Heston classic, The Omega Man.
That's right, 1971.
Yes,
right.
interracial goings on the screen there. Made some people very uncomfortable.
Oh, smoochy, smoochy.
A little bit of trivia, even though Charlton Heston, you know, was a nut.
Yeah.
I believe Whoopi Goldberg, he was on the Whoopi Goldberg show.
Yeah.
And she mentioned the fact there was an interracial kiss. He said, well, let's renew the franchise. And
woo!
She got a smooch from Ben-Hur, so yes, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
We've checked and double-checked. It keeps coming up the same thing. Colonel, the message is Mars needs...
Women, baby.
Women.
From the movie, Mars Needs Women.
Mars Needs Women is an American International Picture science fiction film made by... Who made it? Do you remember?
Roger Corman.
Very close. Larry Buchanan.
Larry, well...
1966. Schlock artist. Wow. Yes.
Yeah, if it were horror, it would be Corman.
Yeah. All right. Here's one that's easy.
I shall leave you as you left me. As you left her. Marooned for all eternity in the center of a dead planet. Buried alive. Buried alive.
I believe the next word is a gentle reproval called Khan.
Right. Yeah. The Wrath of Khan. Very good
movie. Star Trek 2, The Wrath of Khan.
Very good movie.
I'm a friend of Sarah Connor. I was born this year for the field of Cassidy's name statement. Where is she? Look, it may take a while. I'm going to wait this special event. Be back.
I'll be back.
Right.
That would be Arnold Schwarzenegger from the first Terminator movie.
First Terminator movie, 1984. That's right.
For which you now see in the credits a grateful acknowledgement to the work of Harlan Ellison, because Harlan Ellison sued his ass, sued Jim Cameron for stealing his work. And it turns out, yeah, Cameron did steal his work.
So there. All right. And number six.
Why don't you take these appreciate you helping us out.
I'll give you a hint. Actually, I think I could probably just tell you what the missing word is, because it's very hard to know. And you still might not know the movie, but it's a comedy, science fiction comedy.
Uh-huh.
I want you to take these Hillaries. I appreciate you helping us out.
Well, it was made after 1992. That's about all I can say. I Howard the Duck?
Close. It's The Adventures of Pluto Nash.
Oh. So the one...
Same kind of genre, same kind of crazy, wacky...
So the one movie with a black guy in it, I don't get, which is racist.
Number seven.
I'm afraid.
Don't be afraid.
No, be afraid. Be afraid.
Well, be very afraid. But
be very afraid. And that's been used in lots of movies, actually.
That's every other movie. So I'm guessing Gone with the Wind?
No, it's The Fly.
The Fly. Yeah, okay.
And it's the 1986 version of The Fly. My mother saw the original in the theater when she was in high school, and she fainted.
Yes.
When the actual little fly with the human head was... Help me!
That was pretty creepy. I remember seeing that on reruns at 8 or 10 at night.
She
Creature
fainted.
Features. And it was a good movie.
It was a good movie, but she fainted, she said.
I did too, but I was 8, so...
Come on, Cohagan, you got what you want. Give this people...
Air. That would be Total Recall, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Another Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It's called Total Recall, based on the Philip K. Dick short story, as I recall.
Yes, that's right. That's right. He did a lot of that messing with time stuff.
Messing with time, messing with reality, messing with memory.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all interrelated.
Yep.
You mean you let all those people die? Just to test your creation?
Yes. You really are a clever boy.
Why did they have to die?
You might as well say, why do we have to have evil?
Oh, we wouldn't dream of asking a question like that, sir.
Yes, why do we have to have evil?
Oh, I think it's something to do with...
Free will.
Free will. What movie is that?
My first guess is Time Bandits, but if that's wrong, it's probably Gone with the Wind.
And it's not Baron Munchausen either, it's Time Bandits.
No. I recommend Baron Munchausen just because you should really watch everything Terry Gilliam ever
did. You should. I think so, too.
Even if it's not... Great. It's usually, there's something spectacular in it that will reward you richly.
I remember watching an interview with many of the Monty Python characters, actors. I should call them actors.
Yes, players.
Players. Uh-huh. And they talked about Terry Gilliam being the only American in the group.
He is.
Apparently, he got a tremendous amount of grief.
Yes.
From his co-stars.
Yes.
Because he was talking about how they were going to play this specific scene, and he said, and then a bunch of water is going to fall down here.
A bunch?
A bunch of water. We're going to have a whole bunch of water just come down.
And suddenly the Eton public school
right.
snobs start lecturing him on the English language.
Exactly.
Isn't that adorably American of him?
Every time I think of Terry Gilliam, I think about a bunch of water now.
Why don't you put some cheese on it? Some cheese whiz on it, Terry Gilliam.
On your bunch of water.
Yeah. Great director, though.
Great director.
And you can always spot a Terry Gilliam movie. He's really got a signature style that you cannot miss. Yeah.
Cannot miss it. All right.
Okay. What's
number
next?
10. Number 10, you'll get right away.
Okay.
Bow a mine shaft gap.
Sir, I have a plan. Monsieur, I can walk.
And you and I were just talking about this movie.
Dr. Strangelove, yeah.
We have to see it again. We have to watch that movie again.
I want a sound loop with I Can Walk and Cloris Leachman saying, hey, was my boyfriend.
That's my boyfriend. They're the that really is.
That's my ringtone. I want that.
They had the same voice coach.
It did.
All right.
And that was George C. Scott.
Yeah.
George C. Scott is, just look at the people who were in that movie, Sterling Hayden, George C. Scott, Peter Sellers. It's just a wonderful movie.
It was perfectly cast.
Yeah.
And speaking of signature styles, there's another one.
Yeah.
So, okay. That was directed by?
Ernst Lubitsch.
No.
Stanley
Kubrick. Thank you.
Who directed 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
Also Gone with the Wind.
No. This is number 11.
Mr. McGee, don't make me... You wouldn't like me when I'm...
Well, you wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Yes, that's right. Don't make me angry. You wouldn't
every
like me.
Hulk movie and cartoon ever made.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this clip, Magnolia E Publishing says that this specific clip is from the TV series, 1978, with Bixby.
Bill Bixby, yeah.
All right, but yes, that is... Don't You Wouldn't Like Me When I'm Angry has been in every... Except they twisted it in the Avengers movie. I'm always angry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The underrated Bill Bixby and largely forgotten Bill Bixby, who was a very fine
actor. Oh, no. Courtship of Eddie's Father. He's not forgotten.
Yeah. I do believe in one of the Hulk movies.
Yeah.
The Courtship of Eddie's Father is playing on television.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Just a little. Mwah.
Yeah.
And the campus security guard is Lou Ferrigno.
Yes. Taking the free pizzas.
Just
to come in the building. Yeah.
This is called fan service.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Sherlock is very good at that these days. Okay.
Yes, they are.
Number 12.
Prepare ship for light speed.
No, light speed is too slow.
Light speed too slow?
Yes, we're going to have to go right to ludicrous speed.
Ludicrous speed? Sir, we've never gone that fast before. I don't know if the ship can take us.
What's the matter, Colonel Sanders?
Chicken. Yeah. Chicken. That was Spaceballs. Which I didn't really like that much.
Well, Mel Brooks, to his credit, made movies that were good parodies, but they were too late. Both Spaceballs and Men in Tights.
They were too late, and it's for a period there, and he... Believe me, he's a funny man, and he makes funny movies. And his musicals are even funnier than his straight stuff. His timing was off.
His timing.
It just felt like he was like half a step too slow.
Yeah.
And that just, you know, time, and you know, he'd be the first person to tell you, I'm sure, that it's all timing.
Yeah. Yep.
So.
Thank you, Magnolia E Publishing.
Thank you very much. Those were fun.
Thank you, Driftglass.
My pleasure. Always a pleasure, babe.